Welcome to Exploring Boys Education, a podcast produced by IBSC. I'm your host, Bruce Collins. In each episode, we delve into topics of interest for educators and leaders in boys' schools in support of those of you who, like IBSC, champion boys' education. In this episode, we celebrate the IBSC Action Research Program and hear directly from the Action Research Leadership Team and some of the top researchers from the most recent Action Research outgoing cohort. To share more about this episode and other IBSC news, welcome with me IBSC Executive Director Tom Batty, who joins us again for the IBSC Newsreel.
Many thanks, Bruce, and welcome all listeners, those regular and those dialing in for the first time, to a new season of Exploring Boys' Education. With Bruce at the helm since its launch in April 2019, this podcast has garnered close to 30,000 unique downloads, which speaks powerfully to Bruce's mastery of mic and guest and to your loyalty. We look forward to this, our 64th episode, and the months ahead as we continue to bring you insights about boys and their education. It's always good to have sound premise when striving for improvement, and thanks to dedicated researchers, there are now things we know. We know the significance for boys' outcomes of teachers working together to improve their craft and their sharing of experience and findings. IBSC Action Research is a hub for such momentum, a blend of the fruits of academic findings in the public domain with local research tailored to specific cause, using what we know to unearth more. Later in this episode, Bruce speaks with Erna Goodyear, who was awarded the top research project for the 2024 IBSC Action Research Cohort. Erna received this award for the completion of a highly innovative action research project and a valuable contribution to the IBSC research community. Bruce is also joined by outgoing IBSC Action Research Coordinator Laura Sabo, IBSC Action Research Team Advisor Luke Rawl, and other action researchers from the 2023-2024 IBSC Action Research Cohort. Focusing on the action research topic, Balanced Boys, Promoting Healthy Masculinity Beyond the Classroom, Carla Boniolo, Hugh Blood, Kendall Murphy, Carl Kelvington, Melissa Sangvi, Patrick Gluck, and Sarah Moss Holland also share their experience of IBSC Action Research. IBSC could not run the Action Research Program without a dedicated, imaginative group of faculty members from IBSC member schools across the globe. On behalf of the many who will benefit from their work, I thank this team for their commitment to the cause. To this year's IBSC Hawley Jarvis Award recipient, Laura Sabo from St. Christopher's School, a big thank you for your skill and deft touch in leading the advisor team. And of course, the diversely talented members of that advisor team also deserve rich note of appreciation. Thank you, Polly Higgins from King Edward School, Birmingham, Brian Dunn of Roxbury Latin School, Trish Sislak from Crescent School, Corey Brown from the Haverford School, and Luke Rawl from Toowoomba Grammar School. And finally, to the IBSC Action Research gem that is Di Laycock, who is now stepping back into the role of Action Research Coordinator. Thank you, Di, for again working your editing magic on researchers' reports to make sure they shine brightest. Before we hear from these action researchers, I'd like to highlight some upcoming IBSC programmes, the details of which can be found by visiting the IBSC website and clicking the Professional Development tab. Our 2024-2025 professional development season kicks off with three online events addressing engaging boys in learning, fostering resilience, and modern classroom management, led by experts Dr. Michael Reichert, Andrew Reiner, and Mark Dowling. The 30th of September sees the start of 2 3-week online classes, Boys and Belonging, and our evergreen course for teachers new to boys' schools. And keep an eye out for what we believe is a great suite of ideas labs as we host conversations about boys and reading and boys and technology, and 3 gatherings for directors of DEI in North American boys' schools, heads and assistant heads in boys' primary schools, and heads and deputy heads in boys' middle schools. Not a bad lineup. Could even rival the EPL. Back to the here and now, and very much a home fixture, we turn our attention to the inspiring stories from our action researchers. Now, Bruce, you have the whistle.
Thank you again, Tom. It's always good to have you on the podcast sharing IBSC news. Before I speak with this episode's guests, I'd like to mention and highlight that the first of these, Laura Sabo, recently completed her tenure as IBSC Action Research Coordinator. In recognition of her transformational service to IBSC as an employee of an IBSC member school, Laura was awarded the prestigious 2024 IBSC Hawley Jarvis Award. Laura's contribution to the work of IBSC spans 14 years, starting with the completion of her own IBSC Action Research project, after which she served as a team advisor and then the program coordinator. It's a privilege then to be able to start this conversation off by speaking with Laura. Thanks, Laura, for joining us. We're celebrating you, but we're also celebrating another cycle of IBSC Action Research here in London at the IBSC Annual Conference, which is, as we know, being hosted by Harrow School. And the 2023 to 2024 cohort will present a few days after we're actually recording this. And so I'd just like, as we start, you know, this is a significant program in the life of IBSC. The research projects every year are just so insightful and help schools around the world. As the research coordinator, I'd love to hear some insights into some of the research topics that have been engaging researchers over the last 18 months or so since they started.
Sure, sure. You know, Bruce, I have loved this topic because it's really been wonderful to provide our hardworking teachers who are wearing many hats, an opportunity to consider how they can best use their time in these spaces outside their classroom, their typical kind of, if you will, day jobs with the boys, and help them consider various aspects of positive masculinity. So we've seen projects with this group of researchers working with boys in debate teams, community service groups, sports teams, choirs, drama groups, and even things like an embroidery club and a cooking club. These are just giving you a few examples, but the projects have also been done with a wide range of ages of our boys, from primary all the way up to our senior young men. So that's exciting to me. I think this group of researchers was really passionate about our topic and excited to think about ways to conduct their action, their interventions, their investigations in these realms. So just to kind of highlight some of the things that I've seen coming out of their projects is that boys really do welcome spaces to discuss these notions of masculinity. And as educators, we need to recognize that these are safe spaces beyond the classroom if you provide the educator needs to set up some structure to give the opportunity to develop this trust in these spaces. And so I think these research reports show what that structure might look like. And the safety part is important because they might be doing something that's out of their comfort zones, discussing their emotions. You need this relational foundation. So that's one thing. We found that this relaxed nature of spaces outside the classroom really does lend itself to the boys being more vulnerable and authentic with each other. So giving them the space to talk and to develop an understanding of other boys' experiences has really helped them develop these behaviors associated with positive masculinity. And I guess one of the last things I'll find is this research. We've seen a lot of really exciting projects where the positive role models, older boys and their teachers in these realms, can be incredibly powerful in helping our young men navigate the path to manhood.
Thanks so much for sharing those insights, Laura. It's amazing every year that so many of these sort of themes come through that are really relevant for schools around the world. And I want to just mention that so many of the things that you have highlighted there, folks can dive in on a member center, they can read the reports, they can watch teaser videos, they can really get into that research. But before we hand over to Luke and Erna, I'd love to just, in celebration of your time as research coordinator, because that's ending soon, celebration of your achievements, winning the Hawley Jarvis Award, I wonder if you could share with us some of your professional learning highlights from the years that you've been involved in the Action Research Program, not only as the outgoing coordinator, but also as a researcher and a team leader.
Well, sure. And Bruce, I am glad that you asked that, although it's hard to articulate what this program has meant to me. Some highlights, certainly one of them is definitely, as you just mentioned, starting this journey with you as a researcher. Little did I know that filling out that application to participate in the Action Research Program would be one of the best decisions of my life. That trip, first trip, it was Scotch College, Melbourne, my first trip to Australia. It really opened up my eyes to the possibility of what could come out of developing relationships and sharing ideas with an international community. Didn't hurt that it was a gorgeous campus. But it also, it changed the way I teach. And so from then on, and I still today, if I want to try something new with my boys in the library, I'm going to be referring to the literature, and I want their voices. I want to know what they think, so I'm collecting data regularly. So it's just so powerful, and I hope that I have spread that within my school community. Of course, the relationships, I can't, you know, as I've gone into the advisor role and been able to work with the same group of passionate, talented educators weekly, that too has just been, had really expanded my practice. And I've learned so many things from these colleagues that are friends. You know, I've had the privilege, at this point I counted, of working with just over 300 teacher researchers during my tenure. And really, I think the highlight, it sums it up for me, is that they encapsulate why I do this work, why I've done this work. They have a lifelong love of learning and an understanding that it's this developing of authentic collaborative relationships, it's the best way to fulfill this goal. And I just feel really lucky that I've been able to participate in countless scholarly conversations, witnessed talented members of our community make discoveries about their teaching practice, and all in the name of trying to do and be the best that they can be and we can be for our boys.
Laura, you've set so many educators up for success in this program, and you've done the same by introducing this podcast so wonderfully. You've set up this next part of the conversation, so thank you for joining us. And Luke, as I mentioned earlier, in a few moments we'll be speaking to Erna, this year's IBSC Action Research Award winner, and I'm a proud member of Team Luke. But before we discuss Erna's project, I wonder if you can share, like Laura did, some takeaways that you've gleaned from your team's projects this past year about promoting healthy masculinity beyond the classroom.
I think for me, the key takeaway that I certainly saw through the research this year, it really connects to something that underpins boys' education, or what we term boyology, and that's the relational. We need we need to get that right, because relationship is the very medium through which boys learn. And this particular topic, healthy masculinity, beyond the classroom, we saw the myriad of opportunities where our teacher researchers were able to build upon those healthy relationships with their boys to challenge really restrictive versions of masculinity. And the vehicle for doing that was things such as, in Erna's example, was the chemistry cooking club, but we saw all sorts of things. We saw football coaches using the medium of football to cultivate tenderness and vulnerability. We saw heads of pastoral care using dance performances to try to build self-confidence in boys. But that was all done and underpinned by these strong relationships where the boys really took risks because they trusted and they knew. And to be honest, they know that the person, the teacher that they're dealing with, deeply cares about them and loves them. So the relational was absolutely foundational. The other thing that really came through was that restrictive versions of masculinity can be challenged, and our boys will take risks to express themselves emotionally if we provide the space to do so. And we saw that come through many of the projects throughout, that when that time and space and structure is given to something that is so important, and certainly we're all so very busy in our lives at schools, but that is what is important, and the things that are important we've got to give space to.
So let's turn to Erna's project, and you know, this podcast is about learning from her, but also I think in some way to celebrate her further. And her research. What was it about her research in particular, her engagement as a researcher, that led to her winning the IBSC Action Research Award this year?
Erna is an amazing teacher, but like many of us, she wears many hats throughout her school. She's obviously critical to the boarding program at St Andrews. I remember speaking to her at various times where she's away on school student leadership camp. She's coaching sporting teams. And all of these things, as I said previously, they're helping to build that relationship with the boys. So in terms of then her doing her research, that trust that underpins absolutely everything for the boys to take risks and to discuss and open up emotionally about a really sensitive topic, masculinity, and in her specific context, a very, very sensitive topic of that. And Erna had cultivated those relationships very, very clearly throughout. How intentional she was at every step of the process, just deliberately planning every step of the way, capturing data, reflecting on that as she went, and just watching her just grow and evolve with that information. You know, she became a better teacher because she engaged with the boys' voices and listened to what impact her work was doing with the boys.
Well, that is a great introduction to Erna, and I'm excited, Erna, for you to speak next. So thanks, Luke, for contributing as well, your voice to this episode. So, Erna, welcome to Exploring Boys Education. I'm excited to have this conversation. We've connected a little bit over the last number of years, and I know that this has been a really great process for you. And I know you've had an impact on your team members and on the rest of the team as well. It's just been great to see. But before we dive into your insights, I've kind of done the sort of static introduction of Erna, but I'd love to hear a little bit more about you and for our audience to get to know you a little better. So maybe just some insights into career, where you're from, and what drew you to this particular IBSC Action Research topic.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. I grew up in a town about 70 kilometers south of Johannesburg in South Africa. And after school, I studied a BSc degree with no plan of going into teaching at all. Life happened, and I couldn't get a job in the field that I studied. So I ended up, or should I rather say, started off teaching at an all-boys school in Johannesburg. And after my first lesson that I taught, I just knew that this is what I wanted to do. I'm currently teaching at St Andrews College, a full boarding all-boys school in Makanda, South Africa, where I teach chemistry and physics, like you've mentioned. And how I came about the IBSC Action Research project or program, I created a mentorship program at St. Andrews. But in order to do so, I wanted to make contact with teachers from other schools or other boys' schools to kind of see what they were doing at their schools, what was working, what wasn't working, especially in an all-boys boarding environment. And one of the teachers that I made contact with mentioned that he was busy completing his IBSC Action Research at the time. And so I made my way to the website, read up about the concept of action research, which I wasn't really familiar with at the time. And when I saw that the topic for the next year was promoting healthy masculinity beyond the classroom, that really triggered my interest. Because as much as I teach, I'm also quite involved in the co-curricular program of the school, and I saw it as a good challenge.
So let's explore your project in a little bit more detail. You know, Luke has mentioned one or two things, and we've had insights from Laura into some of the other projects and some of the themes that were coming out. But, and I do want to say we're not going to cover everything in detail in here, because I do want you listeners, the listeners, to go and find your video and your full reports on the IBSC website and read it, because it really is superb. But maybe just to give context to some of the things we're going to delve into in this episode, maybe you can tell us about the intervention you implemented in your research and why you chose the particular action or intervention that you applied.
I offered a kitchen chemistry club, which provided boys an opportunity to participate in inquisitive cooking.
I must say that the name of that immediately just like, I'm like, I want to be part of this.
I have to say, I do really love my subject, but I also enjoy food, the preparation and the consuming of, or the consumption of. So it provided them an opportunity to just learn a little bit more while they're cooking, to see some of the theory that they cover in the class and in the subject and why it is important. And I mean, everyone eats, so chemistry is all around us. But it also provided them with an environment where they could work towards a common goal, which I think is really important for boys to know what an outcome is. It keeps them interested. It kept them on their toes. And then in the preparation of the meal, I could observe how they interact with one another, because these boys weren't all in the same group of friends, which made it quite interesting. In the end, the boys would set the table every evening, and while we were enjoying the meal together, open and constructive conversation could happen, quite organically, actually. I never had a topic in mind. I would ask them about their day, and the conversation very often progressed naturally from just talking about their day and their week and the sports team that they made or the bad mark that they got in mathematics, which they were scared to tell their parents about, to topics as deep as self-esteem, belonging, gender roles, which I then focused my study on, body image, disordered eating in boys, which that was quite an interesting session. And I think there's a lot of research to be done there, because that's often something that we would link to girls and girls' schools. And then two of the really interesting topics that they just discussed one evening was identity and then their view on masculinity and what it means to be a man in 2024.
You know, as I was reading your reports, I noticed you mentioned quite an interesting thing. And I must say, I'm just touching on little pieces again, because I want people to read what you've written and dive into that. But you mentioned that the boys initially resisted wearing aprons, which struck me as quite funny. I wear an apron every evening because I love cooking and I'm a messy cook. And they sort of expressed reservations also about, you know, things like vegetarian meals. So I wonder if you have some insights into what their reasons might have been for this resistance to those, the aprons, the vegetarian meals, those kinds of things.
So I think there was never a big reluctance, or they weren't stubborn about not wearing the aprons. It's just maybe something that they don't usually see a dad or a male figure do at home. And I mean, we all are who we are based on what we've observed and experienced in our lives. So I think maybe it's just a link that they make to a mom or a female figure. Many of the boys also mentioned that they don't see their dads or brothers or uncles cook often. It's mostly for mom or a housekeeper to do. So I think with the whole apron thing, that is why that took place. But I didn't have to push it at all. It took one oil splatter while we were preparing a Vietnamese stir fry, and one boy put his apron on, and it almost made everyone else comfortable. And oh, he put on the apron. It normalized it, and I won't say that they thought it was cool, but it wasn't uncool, you know, if one boy could do it. So they were never opposed to it, but yeah, thanks to that Vietnamese stir fry. I tried to also introduce them to, I won't say different cuisines though, because how do you limit those in 6 weeks, or how do you broaden someone's horizon with eating if it's only in 6 weeks? But in one instance, we only prepared vegetarian meals on the night. And it's interesting, Bruce, how even something as basic as a meal and how it is presented had links to a meal that one boy, and I am paraphrasing, but one boy said, this is something I would expect to see at the girls' school dining hall. And it's never a condescending or an offensive comment. It's just, you know, they think of protein and, you know, we need to hit the gym after. So it was very interesting. But once they had it, it was quite interesting how they enjoyed it. And, oh, ma'am, this is so good. We must prepare it again. So it's funny how they link certain images and foods to either being, you know, masculine or effeminate. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, that's amazing thing, that gendered view of food. And I think there is a sense that often veganism or vegetarianism is pursued by,
exactly,
by females and not by males. So, I mean, it's amazing that that came out in the boys. As an English teacher, or as an erstwhile English teacher, I love how language can frame the way we see the world and the way we interact with the world. And I'm really interested in the work of Susan David. I don't know if you know Susan, but her work around emotional granularity and having words for the emotions that we feel. And in your report, you highlighted a change in the boys' vocabulary over the course of your intervention, the 6 or 7 weeks of your action. And so what was that change like? How did you measure it? What specific words or phrases indicated that shift for you? And how did that connect to, you know, the maybe rigid stereotypes they might have had before about gender?
I think one side to answer the question is that in teaching chemistry and physics, it's very difficult. It was very difficult at the start of this process to understand and to accept the fact that action research is very much qualitative data. And so, I mean, you can't quantify everything, which made it, it really blew my mind, because, you know, you want numbers and percentages. And so this was the biggest stretch for me, is also to do something outside of my comfort zone. And when I sat with the data, because while you're busy with your action, you don't really know where the data is taking you. And so only once I sat down and started working on my report and my write-up did I pick up. So when you do your coding and you obviously get to themes that you're working on, I saw that there was a great progression in about 8 of the 10 boys in the way in which they expressed the way they were feeling or their answers. So just to give you an example, every evening while they were having the meal, we would do a reflection exercise. So these would vary from on their devices, they would do a Google form and just tell me about your week without telling me about your week. And they had to either find a picture or draw a picture and hand it in. So obviously there, it's quite difficult to gauge how they've grown in their vocabulary. But one exercise in particular, I think it was week two and week seven, what we did is I showed them different images. It was on their devices and one image at a time. And as the image appeared, the instruction was to just write the first 3 phrases that come to mind when you see this image. So obviously the participants had little labels on their chests. No, they were participant A to J. And so one participant, the first picture is a picture of a man that is, it's an animated picture, but a man that is standing kind of in the corner and he's looking at people around him, and all the male figures around him are very strong and athletically built. And you only see his face and he looks a little bit uncertain. And so the one participant in this week said, expectations, natural strength, internal conflict, as I don't fit the mold. So not only is it a vocabulary thing, but it's also maybe you could see the progression in how they view themselves, and that they don't have to constantly compare themselves. And the reason I'm saying that is that same participant in week 7, then exactly the same picture, said self-acceptance, strength comes from within, and choose authenticity. I know we might think, oh, but they knew what you were looking for, but they weren't. They actually thought that I forgot they've done the exercise already, because one boy said, man, but we've done it already. I said, yeah, but, you know, just continue, do it again. And if I may just share a second example, it's a man staring into a mirror and he looks quite strong from the back. But then if you look at the reflection in the mirror, he seems quite unhappy. It's definitely a negative facial expression. He's actually covering side of his face as well. So the one participant said dysmorphia, expected confidence, idealism, and missing the mark. And in week 7, the same participant said, working on my body image, incremental growth or progress, and self-acceptance. And so that it makes it worth the while doing something like this, because even though we might never see where this road or where this journey ends with the boys, it got them to think about themselves as well. And that was the twist in the plot for me with my action research. I was trying to shatter stereotypes of women in a boys' school and how they perceive us and the gender roles. But in the end, the data that I got and the feedback that I got was a lot deeper. It got to self-acceptance and belonging, which was phenomenal.
And then probably shattering the gender stereotypes they have of themselves.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
I mean, what really strikes me, Anna, is the fact that sometimes we look at some of these challenges we face in boys' schools and it seems like a huge mountain to us. And so we kind of don't even start on that. We don't even go at it. And yet I think as I listen to you, I just get the sense that when we intentionally try something, that progress will be seen no matter how small. And if we care about the whole boy, we're taking that boy from somewhere to somewhere else. And if there's some movement, that's progress. And then the next step can happen. I also love sharing really practical things for other teachers to use, and I love the blob tree exercise, which I was drawn to the name, but also just seems to be a powerful tool for helping boys with emotional expression. And so I was wondering if you could just help us a little bit, understand what that exercise is, how other educators might think about employing it. And maybe there were some responses you got from that exercise that were kind of really insightful.
So I stumbled upon the blob tree. It was definitely not intentional. And I'm a tutor to a grade 9 tutor group in one of the boarding houses at St. Andrews. And we see this tutor group every Monday for 45 minutes, and that's where you touch base. And because we're full boarding, you really see the children 24/7. But this is definitely just to touch base and, how they're doing and their academic rigor. Is it still on point? And so I thought I would try this out with my tutor group before I actually implemented with my action research. And what I like about this, and in a South African context, it's beautiful because the figures on the blob tree, they are not gender specific, they are not race specific. And I explained that a little bit more in my presentation, where our country has come from, you want people to feel comfortable in who they are, where they come from. And so I thought this is something that I need to try. So the blob tree has these figures on the tree, and they only have facial expressions or body language that you can almost identify. And so I would suggest that if one is trying to use the blob tree and you ask people to identify which figure they can relate to and why, because that's what I did with the boys in week 1 and then again in week 7, which I'll get to in a few. But you look at where, firstly, the boys, I think, looked at where the figures were situated on the tree in week 1. No one chose the bottom half of the tree. Wow. Because that would show vulnerability and maybe weakness in their eyes. So, there's one on a swing at the bottom of one of the bottom branches, but no one chose the poor blob because he's at the bottom of the tree. And so even in that context, I think there was a bit of progression in their way of thinking that you don't always have to be at the top of the tree to be in a good space. And so even here, to link with the previous question, their vocabulary and just the way in which they articulate how they felt, that showed progression with this exercise from week 1 to week 7, because boys would often just say that they feel like a number 5 or whatever because it's in the middle of a tree and it's a Wednesday. It's almost weekend. It doesn't really tell me a lot about how you're feeling, but to them it did. And then in week 7, boys would choose, even if it was a negative expression on the face, and they would be keen to share why. And what was beautiful in that last week is that the boys had their house masters. And this is your second part of the question, is did we see, any, how it worked out for us to actually use this exercise? The last week, the boys invited the housemasters to join in on the action in the kitchen. And as per usual, we completed the reflection exercise, which was the blob tree. And the boys got used to these discussions every week, so they knew that something was going to happen. And I decided to use the blob tree that week, almost to start my action research with it and then conclude it with it to see if there's any data or any progression. And if there weren't any changes, that's why it's cyclic, this whole idea. And so the housemasters were also asked which figures they related to. And it was very interesting to see how it could have been very uncomfortable or slightly uncomfortable for some of them. Not because they're not open to share. We've got amazing housemasters at our school, and they really are very open to talk and show their emotions. But just to be put on the spot with boys, I think that was also interesting. So the beauty of this exercise on the night was the fact that the boys now witness these adult male role models, I almost want to say, men that they really have a lot of respect for, and that they were comfortable to share their emotions. The answers were very short, and the boys were so keen to talk and tell their housemasters how they were doing. So I found that one of the greatest experiences, just to include someone else in one of our sessions.
So before we wrap up the conversation and talk about some sort of insights and advice you might have for educators like yourself in other schools around the world, and possibly implementing similar kind of programs or interventions, or maybe people get ideas from you that they want to tweak. Before we dive into that, the one other interesting thing that struck me was you note in your report that the boys' evolving views on masculinity sometimes differed from those of their fathers. Did these differences, or as boys sort of noticed these differences or maybe experienced like a dissonance there, did those lead to interesting opportunities for discussion?
I think that is something that many boys' schools could potentially observe. So we have many boys who have old boy parents. So their dads or their uncles or grandfathers even would have attended St. Andrew's College years ago. And yet again, discussing it a little bit more in my presentation, but often the parents or the grandparents would share their experiences, and the boys would feel like they need to have that same experience. And I'm not saying that the grandparents' or the parents' experience was a negative one, but times have changed. And so the scene at schools have changed dramatically. And so sometimes boys would think that what their parents did and how they perceived the world, that is what they need to take on to be a college boy or to have a good time at the school or to be successful at the school. And what was interesting, and three things, and I'll keep it short, but I got responses from the parents of the boys who participated in the action on the practical side saying, thank you so much for introducing my son to kitchen chemistry or just to cooking. He managed to cook a meal, and I got a picture from one mother, and she said, she's sad to say that it looked slightly better than it tasted. But he was keen to prepare a meal for his parents, which he learned at school. So that was the practical part of it. And then also bumping into two fathers next to the side of the rugby field a couple of weeks ago, where I think they're quite modern in their views and quite inclusive in their views and the way they go about life. So one dad in particular, also an old boy, but just said that he's incredibly thankful that what they are trying to teach their sons at home was also, I want to say, reinforced and yeah, that they're being held accountable to the same, I don't want to call them standards, but values at the school as well. And I thought that was quite, yeah, that was exceptional, that a dad is also comfortable to share that with a teacher. And then just lastly, a boy in the last session, I had some interviews with the boys who were comfortable to do so. And one boy just said, after this experience, it is his goal in life and he wants to hold himself accountable. And I'm going to quote him. He says, I want to be a good man and not just be good at being a man.
Wow.
And I thought that was quite profound.
Yeah. There's the language again. There's,
yeah.
You know, on face value, those statements seem very similar. But if you go under if you just go under the skin of those statements, they're completely different. Given the success of this Kitchen Chemistry Club, still love the name of that, is there a consideration to do this again or expand it?
I think that there is so many opportunities for not just kitchen chemistry, but something along the lines of a unconventional or non-conventional activity. I always think of something, an activity like ballroom dancing. Mm. Our school offers it as an activity, but I think there are four or five boys that take it on. And a few weeks ago in our assembly, we had an opportunity to celebrate these boys, and they had their partners from other schools come, and they They displayed a dance that they've been working on, and they went to a provincial dance competition. And for the first time, these boys were recognized. And so I think for me personally, I would love to offer the club annually, if it is possible. I would have loved to present it again, tweak a few things here and there, but always aim it at the same age group, which is grade 11, so 16, 17-year-olds. And I think it would be interesting to see how the different groups respond. So yet again, I was hoping that a variety of boys would sign up. And in my report, I do discuss that a little bit, but the 10 boys that signed up were very similar in their backgrounds. And that could be a cultural thing, that culturally it's not acceptable for a boy to cook. And that was one of the findings that I did not expect to see at all. So to maybe see how different year groups, or as it progresses, whether boys from a variety of cultures will be comfortable to sign up.
That's amazing. You know, I could speak to you for hours about this. I'm inspired. And so thank you for spending this time with us. Thanks for sharing some insights. I think what you've helped the words on the pages of your report come alive. And so thank you for that. Thank you for the work you do with your boys. I think they are so fortunate to have you in their lives. And once again, congratulations for winning this award. A job well done.
The IBSC Action Research Program remains one of the most powerful professional learning opportunities for educators in boys' schools. This episode is simply a snapshot of the good work that the 2023-2024 cohort did to champion boys' education. Listen to the separate bonus segment of this episode too to hear from more action researchers, and definitely spend time reading all of the research reports we have available for members on the IBSC Member Center. Thank you again for joining us. Until next time, keep on championing boys' education.